Dad, you know how you were saying I need to do more, be more, the whole fast fiber thing?
Yes.
Anyways, I saw that Vox is offering free standard installation and activation to the value of 3,000 rand.
That is a good deal.
With the money you save, I can buy some new skins for Fortnite. Talk about money in the bank.
With free activation to the value of 3,000 rand. Live smart. Hack life. Level up with Vox Fiber. Visit vox.co.za. T's and C's apply.
I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 257 for the week starting 7 April 2019.
Actually, that's not the date. It's the 22nd. Should we update it in the show? Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. You can WhatsApp the show. 071-999-1111 is the number to use.
On Talk Central this week, Samsung's having some troubles with its folding smartphone.
Also on the show this week, news from the world of console gaming. BBM is no more. And Apple and Qualcomm smoke the peace pipe.
It's Sunday afternoon. It's Sunday afternoon. We are live streaming at live at techcentral.co.za, but we're trying something new. And this time, we're talking video and tech.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Rethot?
How's it, Duncan?
Bit of a bumbling start there to our first video adventure.
We can just cut and restart if we really want to, right? But
take it on the chin. We are doing our first live YouTube video for this show. We haven't publicized it, although it is live on YouTube. We'll probably do it next week. We weren't quite brave enough to send it out on Twitter and all the other social media this week, given that it's our first attempt at it and things can go pear-shaped as they already have started to do this episode. But we are live on Google. What's this thing called? Google Hangouts on Air on YouTube Live. Mm-hmm. And it's working quite well so far. We're going to be doing quite a bit of work in the coming months to get the video side of things up and running more smoothly. We have been playing around with some very powerful software called OBS Studio, which is a live streaming software that many gamers use to stream to services like Twitch. We have been having some difficulties, though. It's not the easiest piece of software to use, and we have been trying to get a Skype call through a technology called plugin called NDI to do the live stream over YouTube, but it hasn't been working very well. So we're using the easier to use for the moment, Google Hangouts on Air, and we'll include this video with the podcast entry on Tech Central this week. We're also going to still be live on live.techcentral.co.za through our normal Spreaker links, and we will obviously make the audio version of the podcast available as before to anyone in their favorite, who can subscribe in their favorite podcatchers, be it iTunes or Pocket Cast or whatever you happen to listen to. But new frontier for this podcast, live videos. We aim to record at 1 p.m. on Sundays. Don't always quite get that right. We are recording, in fact, on Monday afternoon today, but it is an Easter long weekend. Rachel and I spent a good chunk of yesterday afternoon playing around with this tech and making sure it's working. Here we are with our first ever attempt at this. And as I say, we'll be brave, and we might be brave enough next Sunday to broadcast this more widely than we are today.
I think we've certainly established one thing, Duncan. We definitely we do have faces for radio, not for TV.
That's true.
I think we've come to that realization.
So why are we doing this exactly?
I don't know. YouTube, it's fun. It's exciting. It's video.
It is fun. I love your background there, by the way. You've got some interesting RGB colorations going on, and that PC over your left shoulder looks like a bit like a disco.
Yeah, that's my it's my stimulating RGB colors. It's when I'm tripping every night after work, right? Yeah, my old gaming rig over there, collection of Lego, and in the corner you'll see some pink lighting from a very old lava lamp, which is all the swag for the background of the video.
Is that an Xbox controller nailed to your wall as well?
Yeah, there's one. There's two more, they just fell down. They're the relics. They're the ones that got damaged in fits of rage.
Yeah.
So they are up there as tokens of the memories.
So here we are on Easter weekend. It was an interesting start to Easter Monday. The massive, massive storm here, certainly in the northwestern side of Johannesburg. Yeah. neighbors in the complex near me, their wall collapsed. My house was flooded. Really bad stuff. We had a ridiculous amount of rain in about 30 minutes and more forecast for this afternoon. So the first thing I did do, though, was as soon as I put the mains back on, I switched the mains off because I was worried about getting electrocuted. But as soon as all the water was mopped up and the mains was back on, of course, checked the fiber and it was working fine.
Ah, oh, beautiful fiber. In the good old DSL days, internet would have been down across Joburg.
Good
right
days.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Old copper, wet copper. I mean, yeah, it's disastrous. Yeah. At least we know with that little copper strand, it can get wet. It's fine.
Yes. Yeah. So this fiber survived a flood this morning. And here we are doing the show. So there's quite a bit to talk about this Easter long weekend. Let's talk about Samsung Gate, if I can call it that, the latest.
And the quiz. Sorry, Duncan, before we get into that, the quiz.
Oh, thank you. Always forget about the quiz. Do you want to do the first question?
All right. In the quiz that almost wasn't today, BBM is now no more. Who had the license technology? Who had licensed the technology from BlackBerry to continue developing it?
Microsoft announced a new Xbox this week, which excludes something previously unthinkable. What's missing?
Oh, that's a biggie. Yeah. Third question: which chip manufacturer this week gave up on making mobile chips for 5G networks?
And the fourth question, NASA's new planet-hunting orbital telescope discovered its first, Earth-sized extrasolar planet this week. What is the telescope called?
And the final question, a new report from security researcher Troy Hunt shows that which password is the most commonly used worldwide. And it's surprising, but it's not surprising.
Is that one of your passwords, Rafat?
Yeah, I shouldn't be saying this, right? I've got up to at least 20 digits, so I think I'm fine.
a password I used to use a lot, and before I realized I was being really, really stupid, but I used it across websites. This was a long time ago, and none of my accounts use this password anymore, in case anyone's thinking of trying it. Was let me in 01, and I used it across multiple sites. It was
with the E's and the 3's mixed up, right?
No, just let me
oh,
in.
Oh, was it just the word? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Which a brute force hacker would have got in 3 seconds. Probably.
Oh, a little dictionary word search, yes. Mm. But we know with the beautiful thing, password managers, you shouldn't actually be knowing any of your passwords in any case.
No, that's true.
You should be able to recite it off memory.
I use Dashlane now, and it's all machine generated, and I actually don't know any of my passwords. I think I still know my Google password, but it's the only one. Mainly because I have to enter it so often, but I should actually just add my Google password to Dashlane as well.
Yeah, with mobile apps now too, it's easy across all platforms, really. And I've got a few tricks for recovering my password for my password manager too. So should I forget that or be logged out, I can access that very easily from anywhere, and then have that password. And it's just a little tricks and hiding it in a few places and that type of thing.
Yeah.
Good times.
All right. Now that we've got the quiz out the way, thank you, Rehat. Let's do our, let's look at this week's news and Samsung Gate. A couple of years ago, you'll remember the Note 7 exploding battery fiasco. Yeah. Got the phones banned on various airlines, etc. They seem to have shot themselves in the foot again, at least if the early reports are anything to go by. Reviewers who got hold of the Samsung Galaxy Fold, which is their brand new first folding smartphone, many of them have been reporting that it's been breaking. Apparently what reviewers have been doing is there's a protective film across the screen, and like you would do when you get a new cell phone, is peel that layer off. Now, apparently this layer on this one is more difficult to pull off, but the reviewers did it anyway through a bit of brute force. And apparently this layer is necessary to protect the integrity of the screen, and you're not supposed to remove it. But Samsung didn't point this out in the box when in the materials that were sent to the early reviewers, most of whom seem to be in the US. And when they did this, there were reportages of the screen breaking. I saw one video where a side of the screen went black, and then it slowly moved across the entire phone until it was unusable. But there was another issue apparently unrelated to the screen protector, if I can call it that. And that's what there's this sort of weird bulging occurring at the point of the fold in the phone, which is really interesting because Samsung claimed that they did tests in their laboratories folding these phones 100,000 times in a machine to ensure that durability, and these reviewers have managed to break it in the space of hours. It is concerning that this is happening. Samsung, the latest from Samsung is that they're going ahead with the planned global launch, which is happening just this coming week. It's going on sale, I think, in the US and some other markets on the 24th or the 26th, which is later this week. And I do wonder what this is going to mean for demand for this product, because I certainly would not be, and this is a $2,000 phone. Given these reports, there's no way I'd buy one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we knew this from the beginning, though. It's too early for people to really be investing money in this tech as the main driver as a normal consumer. I mean, we're not really there yet, I think. And then, unfortunately, it shows that the technology is still a little bit iffy, if that's the right word. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that sticker peeling incident shouldn't have happened. I mean, the label should have been better on the box. I don't know if there's a different version of the phone coming out than the retail one. It's maybe got a different form or something on.
Well, apparently the replacement ones that have been sent out to the reviewers, the ones that broke, and now apparently have a sticker on in big letters on the box saying "Do not remove the protective phone."
Like with the mini screen protectors, I also saw a few photographs where the edges just started peeling a little bit. So, you know, you get that little unsightly lifted up piece of plastic if your screen protector isn't put on properly. And even if that happens a little bit, that inclination to want to peel it it's there, right? It's just the irritation. So it'll be interesting to see if they've got a program that allows people to replace that. I don't think so. I mean, where they take it into a service center and replace that form if anything happens.
Yeah, I'd imagine a screen repair on this phone is going to be very expensive.
Oh, yeah, it'll probably be a few rand. I mean, we know the curve. But again, it's not glass, right? It's plastic. So I don't know if there's some benefit in terms of pricing.
I'm not sure.
But it's sad. Sure. I mean, I'm excited for the technology. It's never nice to see a product facing issues like this. But, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, they're no stranger to the old phone scandal. So it's how they address it. And if they're confident enough to go ahead with the launches worldwide, it says a lot, unless somebody didn't do their homework again. But, we won't speculate on that.
Yeah. Well, they've got a couple of days before it officially launched commercially, so maybe we'll see an update. I think it might be a little bit irresponsible of Samsung to launch this without at least pulling it back for a few weeks to have a look at the issues. And I suppose the concern here is that folding phones could be stillborn because of this. Consumers may say, well, these things break. I'm not going to buy one of these things. Forget about it. And it could hold back the development of or the mass market adoption of folding phones by several years.
I don't think it'll be that drastic. I mean, there's still a demand for it. We know with new tech and innovative tech, even the old Samsung that kind of blew up, there was demand for those devices. People wanted to hang on to them, right? It's definitely putting them in the news. You can argue that it's still, still exposure on them and their folding phones. So it's how they address this again, and if they come out and their product is actually good in the hands of your average consumer and it doesn't break as easily. I'm sure we're going to see a lot of YouTube videos of, YouTubers trying to do various things to these phones once they get them. And that'll be the perfect kind of field test, right? They should have just done that in the beginning. Put this in the hands of people that want to kind of just use it in a tough environment, in a harsh environment, at least. Look, either way, it's good content. It's a very exciting time for us to see what's happening. But, I'm still going to be a few years off before I will invest in one of those.
Yeah, me too. No, certainly not buying a phone that costs $2,000. And that's cheap compared to the Huawei, which I think is about $2,700.
I see the Huawei is also a nice one. Sorry, that I'm looking forward to seeing. I think that one's got a bit more potential, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like a better design to me. Samsung has come out and defended its own design, saying it's the one that makes more sense. I haven't played with the Samsung one yet. They're having a launch event here in Johannesburg this coming week, so I'm hoping to go along to that to to have a play and see if I can break it.
Don't fall it the wrong way, all right? Just fall it the right way. That's the only thing you need to do.
You remember at Mobile World Congress this year, they put these folding phones, both Huawei and Samsung, put them behind glass and didn't allow anyone to touch them. One wonders whether they knew something that these things were fragile and they were worried about bad press getting out. Maybe those were early prototypes and they were just worried. And they've seen some of these issues during the development phase of this. It does raise interesting questions. Now, the Huawei one, as far as I know, has, you know, while they've had events where people have been able to play with them and look at them, they haven't sent them out to reviewers yet. And maybe they're going to hold back a bit on that in light of what's happened with Samsung. I do wonder if Huawei is going to be affected by the same issues.
Look, either way you look at it, if you do delay a launch, it's probably going to cost a lot more than trying to see through. Maybe it's just a few units. Maybe it was a bad production batch. You know, you wouldn't admit that either. But maybe it was that early, you know, maybe the glue wasn't properly set or something. I mean, we've heard these stories before, right? So again, if they're very comfortable with their manufacturing process and they don't foresee this to happen, because like you said earlier too, they have folded these things hundreds of thousands of times during testing. So we know that the fold is probably secure. This definitely just seems like an adhesive based issue, really. I mean, because it's not the integrity of the screen. Everything below it is fine. It's just if people peel this thing off, and let's be honest, yes, they should have labeled it better, but once that's out and people know they shouldn't touch that, I think they'll be fine.
Interesting times ahead, but with the global commercial launch this week, I guess if they are going to do a recall, then it's going to have to happen this week.
Yeah.
Because they know about this issue, and if they go ahead with the commercial launch and people start buying this thing and they all start breaking, Samsung could have a class action lawsuit on its hands.
Oh, yeah, it's too expensive a product. People aren't going to take it lightly. But again, I don't think if they are going to go ahead with the launch, definitely not as big an issue as a battery issue, because there you physically have to get those phones back and replace the batteries. In this case, if they just fix, and also the batteries are much more difficult one to fix, especially if you've got 10 million batteries in your storeroom. With this, considering the construction of, or considering what it is that's failing, it's likely that the fix would be easy, or if they had to fix it, it would have been easy, or it's just a matter of improving on that that little piece of plastic. I wonder if there's a market for after-party or third-party foldable phone covers, should you wish to replace it with something better.
Can you put covers on these things? I've been wondering about that.
Yes, I've seen a few little video clips online. It's like a little snap-on, two little half snap-on that just fits onto each side of the back of
Makes
the phone.
Sense.
But that's because the Samsung one folds inwards. The Huawei one folds outwards. So the screens are – so there, I don't know what you will do. You'll probably just have either see-through silicone-style cover that just kind of gives you bumper protection. Or just really thick screen protectors, I guess.
Or just carry it very, very carefully.
Very, very gently.
So there's some interesting news, Rechard, this week in the world of console gaming. Microsoft announced a new Xbox One S, the first Xbox that they've announced that doesn't have an optical drive. So you'd have to get all of your content over the internet, over your broadband connection. Probably not that surprising, right?
No, I mean, as an Xbox 360 user, towards the last end of last, middle, beginning of last year, I was able to buy games off the 360 store. And I mean, that negated the need to go out and buy a physical disc. I mean, I think the numbers must have shown it, definitely. I mean, people just love that service. On demand gaming, we've got fiber now. It is a bit sad, I guess, because, you know, going out to the shop and buying the disc, it's always been fun, you know, looking for the game, but it's impractical today. It is a big milestone, though. I mean, if you think about one of the main reasons why consoles kind of held out so long, or why they managed to hold out so long, is kind of the piracy thing, right? So, you know, your physical disc isn't as easy to pirate on your with your console with all those chips in, where they can check if the integrity of the, you know, the software that you're running is actually valid. Again, they don't need to do that anymore, because if you stream with games being online, and if you just download your games straight from the internet, you know that you're kind of cutting out that you can't pirate your game as easy more because you're connected to the network, and the network always checks that you've got a valid account and et cetera, yeah. et cetera, and that you actually did purchase that. So I'm sure it makes sense in the long run for them to do this. But yeah, games on demand, what could be better?
It's the obvious way this is going. Interestingly, Sony has hinted that it's next, in fact, more than hinted, they've said the PlayStation 5, or whatever it ends up being called, will have an optical drive, presumably a Blu-ray player. So Sony's committed. Microsoft not so much. Although this Xbox One S discless edition is aimed at the sort of entry level of the end of the market. Now I would have imagined that the discless version of these consoles would have perhaps appealed to the higher end users, because they're the ones who are more likely to have the broadband connections to be able to download these massive games.
Exactly. But I mean, I guess the cost of a physical that drive is still a few rand, right? Are you right there? You're swimming in water yet, Duncan?
Yeah, no, I'm just saying the rain is coming down again, so...
I can hear rain dripping in the background. Your PC is covered.
It's covered, yes. So yeah, discless. If I was going to buy a console today, and you know I'm not a console gamer, I'd see no reason to get one with an optical drive in it.
No, I agree. I mean, it's and aren't games? You can buy games cheap online, if I'm not mistaken, too. It's slightly cheaper if you buy a digital version.
I haven't checked.
But I think, just coming back to your point earlier about Sony, Sony's got a big interest in keeping the disc alive because of the, you know. All the other divisions, if they stop it on the PlayStation, I think the repercussions within kind of the other businesses would also, we'll see a slighter decline within the discs, usage.
Blu-ray is their technology. I mean, they invented it, and they had a massive war with, who was it, Panasonic and Microsoft over HD DVD about 8-9 years ago. Remember that? And they won that. It was, that was the modern equivalent of VHS versus Betamax, and Sony Blu-ray won that war. But it was a bit of a Pyrrhic victory, wasn't it? Because the Blu-ray format is on its way out rapidly.
Yeah, I mean, people aren't consuming disc-based content anymore. Everything is streaming. No. I mean, even in South Africa, which is usually lags in this technology, has seen a really impressive uptake in streaming services. So, you would imagine, I mean, yes, we do still have a very big movie rental market, especially in the smaller towns, where people don't really have access to, the likes of the Netflix, or don't have broadband capacity or broadband access for it. But yeah, this is the way everything's going, right? On demand, instantaneously available, and no physical media. If you can sell it to me quicker, if I buy something on a whim, it's a lot easier for me to do so digitally than me going to the shop. Yeah. There's also a bit of that consumerism angle, I guess.
Yeah. And then, of course, we're heading into the next console generation quite soon, and Sony executives this week providing some details about that PS5, assuming, again, that's what it's going to be called, which it probably will be. That's going to be coming out sometime next year, probably towards the back end of next year. And what I found most interesting about the announcement was that it's going to support 8K gaming.
Now, that's certainly looking towards the future, right? Wow.
Yeah.
But 8K also.
With
8K also, I mean, those extra pixels come in very handy if you have VR, 2 4K screens in your eyes, basically. So, there's going to be a big play, I think, for consoles in general. Because now with PC, I can get a HTC Vive and plug it in and it can work. But generally, as with most things on a PC base, your hardware needs to be updated, make sure you've got the right amount of RAM, graphics card, all that. Console makes it easy. So it's plug and play. And if you have some, I've surprisingly seen a lot of people who love their VR. I don't know if it's a full VR headset, but they've got VR capabilities, right? Currently with some of their games, game titles. And people are enjoying that. So I can only imagine once you improve the quality, give a more immersive experience. Maybe, I don't know if they're going to even look at HoloLens-like technology, But even having said that, just full-on VR, I think it's going to be fantastic in high resolution, even if you have scaled it down to 4K, which you will have to. I don't think 8K VR is going to be a reality for these devices soon.
Yeah, I do wonder about whether we really need 8K at this point. I mean, you can't buy an 8K TV in retail in this country anyway right now. I know there are a couple of manufacturers who have developed 8K TVs. I'm not sure how widely available they are commercially, but if they are, if you can buy them in retail, you just know they're going to be very, very, very expensive right now, in the hundreds of thousands of rand.
Yeah.
So 4K has just really taken off. I mean, the price of 4K came down very rapidly, and you can now buy a 4K TV for the same price you would have bought a full HD TV 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And no doubt we're going to head that in direction with 8K, but I'm not sure what we need 8K for unless we're going for very large TVs, sort of 90-inch plus.
I also think it's a power. Remember, the power that you have in your console to be able to push 8K will then also allow you to do really good 4K.
True.
You know, with all the fancy bells and whistles for that game switched on. So
yeah.
I think it's a bit of it's obviously betting in the future, but it's also just making sure that it's like that cool sticker they can put in the box that says Wii first 8K console or whatever. Mm. But it just really helps with, you know, with gaming in general, because it's just a much more powerful
This will be a console. True 4K console, whereas I think the current generations, while they can play a 4K resolution, they probably are dialing down some of the special effects.
Yeah, exactly.
This PS5 and whatever the next Xbox is will be the true 4K consoles, even though Sony is already marketing that this thing's going to be capable of 5K. I don't think you're necessarily going to be getting a fantastic experience at 8K.
Yeah, I agree. Also, we need to look at the developer support for it. I don't think, I'm sure, you know, having 8K resolution graphics for a game is quite a bit of a, you know, step up from just having 4K or even 1080p type graphics. A lot more work that has to be done within the art department. So interesting time. But look, I mean, you need the power, right? Because you never know what's around the next corner. A new gaming engine. I mean, we've seen the new Unreal Engine with some of the photorealistic.
Wow, that's amazing.
Renders. It's absolutely incredible. And again, that might not be 4K. That might not be 8K when you play it on your TV. If you play it in 4K, but your machine will be able to process all those things in real time. That's photorealism. That's mind blowing. Absolutely mind blowing.
It's very exciting. It's gonna be amazing to see what games look like in 5 years. Sometimes I wish I could get into a teleportation device and just go forward 10 years, play a game from the future, and then come back again and report on it. Because game graphics from 10 years from now are going to be so good we can't even picture it. I think.
No, it's unreal. I mean, just think back where we were raving. I saw a few old magazine covers recently where the game graphics were kind of, this is the best game graphics we've ever seen. It's like blocky, pixelated. I mean, we lived in a time where that was fantastic. Old Doom and Duke Nukem, those graphics were mind-blowing, right?
Yeah, Doom was groundbreaking.
And now we're just getting closer to reality. So it's obviously looking forward to that type of technology. But imagine playing a game like PUBG or Battlefield, and it looks like you're actually playing a movie because the graphics are so real.
Yes.
That is a twist.
That's where it's going.
It'll be twisted gaming, really, if you think about it.
It
could get very weird once things look like the real thing.
Yeah, that's where it's going, though. I mean, I remember when Doom first came out, and it was like, oh, wow, look at these graphics. And now you can play Doom in a web browser.
Yeah, and it looks horrible. But yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of PUBG. I've been playing a lot of that, as I usually do. And the game, that game, graphically, they've really improved it. The continual kind of just smoothing the game, making sure the graphics run better. And again, you know, you don't need a monster beast to run it. No, we got digressing a bit here, but it's just there's a limit in how real you want certain things to be. I guess, you know, you don't necessarily want to be playing a full on war game and having blood, guts, and gore in your face. Maybe that's what people want, but the game.
I'm sure that's what they want.
The consoles will be able to do that, right?
Yeah. They're going to be so hyper realistic. It's going to be interesting. Speaking of legacy stuff, did you ever use a BlackBerry?
I didn't want to get involved with the BlackBerry back in the day. I didn't like it. I didn't like the operating system. The operating system was horrible. Yeah.
Neither did I. I never owned one. Yeah, the keyboard was good, but I also never found any interest in buying a BlackBerry. I was very much on the Nokia treadmill, and I liked the direction they were taking with those they were feature phones, but they were advanced feature phones, like the E71 and the E72 and some of those devices with keyboards. I thought they were a good response to BlackBerry, and I must say I preferred Symbian to the BlackBerry OS. But BlackBerry was huge in this country just 10 years ago, and one of the reasons for that was, of course, the BlackBerry Internet Service, BIS, which included BBM for free. These are back in the days when mobile data charges were utterly ludicrous. And for 15 or 60 rand a month, you'd get the BlackBerry Internet Service, which included unlimited internet and unlimited texting. And as a result of that, BBM, or BlackBerry Messenger, was absolutely massive in South Africa. It was rivaling Mixit at the time. In fact, it may have even overtaken Mixit at one point. All the kids had BlackBerries. It was absolutely incredible, because you remember BlackBerry started out as a pager type service, and then they developed the smartphones, and they were huge in corporate America. If you remember at the time of the 9/11 attacks in New York, people were sending out BBM messages from the tower. All the executives were using BBM and on their BlackBerries. And then for some reason, in emerging markets in particular, and it's because of this low-cost business or BlackBerry Internet Service offering that they introduced with the mobile operators, it got a huge take-up, particularly amongst teenagers. And it was a massive service in South Africa until WhatsApp really started to take off, until the smartphones started to take off. So first the iPhone, which obviously wasn't used hugely in South Africa, and then, of course, Android devices spread like wildfire, and WhatsApp rapidly displaced it. But I think what many people don't know is that since BlackBerry exited the smartphone market, although you can still buy a BlackBerry smartphone, it's no longer made by the Canadian company. It's now made, I think, by an Indonesian or a Thailand company. I forget the name of them. There's a company called MTech. I think they're called MTech. Indonesian company that bought the licensing rights it's MTech Group, to the BBM software. And they've continued to develop it ever since BlackBerry pulled the plug on its smartphone business. One of the first things they did was they decided to make it cross-platform, whereas before BBM would only run on BlackBerries. They then introduced versions that worked on both Android and iOS. But it was too little too late, I think, and WhatsApp had already started to entrench itself. WhatsApp already killed Mixit, which was the South African homegrown messaging service that was hugely popular on feature phones for a while and never really made the transition to smartphones. But BBM soldiered on for quite a few years, and they've now announced at the end of next month that they're pulling the plug on it. There will be no more BBM. So rest
in peace,
BBM.
Rest in peace indeed, but the numbers must be really low, right? I mean, I would love to see that. Is it single digits, double digits, maybe a few hundred
people? Tiny.
But yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, it was a great system. I was always envious of it. Having access to kind of chatting to everybody instantly, virtually for free or for free. But that whole PIN idea, I don't like so much. So you need to share your PIN, and if you lost your phone, you had to get a new PIN, so you had to basically re-add everybody. It was a bit weird. It was a bit clunky in that regard. And WhatsApp's just came out of nowhere with the most strangest name for a messaging application.
Yes.
WhatsApp.
Yes.
I was very confused by that for a while.
So my wife is watching this video, and she just posted a comment. First person to watch us do a live stream, I suspect. Since we haven't advertised this, we'll do so next week quite heavily, and hopefully we'll get people involved in the chat room and get a proper discussion going, which is why we're actually doing this and why I'm really excited about using YouTube as a platform for doing this podcast via live video. Mm-hmm. But my wife says, my BlackBerry Bold took awesome photos. I can't imagine the pictures were anything compared to the pictures you get on a modern smartphone. They did have good cameras. I've heard quite a few people say that compared to the phones of the time, they took good pictures. But obviously, compared to a modern iPhone or a Samsung or a high-end Huawei, those old phones, their pictures are pretty crappy.
Yeah, and without anything to do with those photographs, it was a bit pointless. I mean, what happened to all those photographs that people had on those kind of pre-smartphone camera phones? Because there was no real way to download it or store it in Google Photos.
No. You'd lose
today,
the relation. Yeah.
Today, every photograph you take automatically gets pushed up to the internet. You back it up. It's there. Mm. You know, I can go back 5-6 years now.
And search it using artificial intelligence.
Oh, that's the best, isn't it? When you type in find a place Dogs. Or find brown, you know, brown paper or whatever. You know, it's crazy.
Yes.
It's, yeah. I love old girl AI.
Show pictures of my dogs in 2002, and it'll find it. It's amazing. Well, actually, not that far back. But
it is actually almost 19 years now. 18 years. That's a long time.
Well, the Google Photo
2002. Service. Oh, the photo service. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So BBM is gone, and no doubt will not really be missed since no one was really using it anymore.
BB what?
BB what? Apparently it was still quite big in Indonesia, but nowhere else really.
Yeah.
So, what else do we need to talk about this week? Apple and Qualcomm. So, you know, these companies were at each other's throats until recently. Apple, Tim Cook having a real go at Qualcomm's business model and saying, we're not paying these exorbitant license fees. We think your business model sucks, and we don't want anything to do with you. Apple was really trying to, was doing their best to say, well, you know, we're not going to work with Qualcomm anymore. We're not interested in your chipsets, etc. Except they had a problem. Qualcomm is the world leader in 5G chipsets. And apart from going to China to source alternatives, which I don't think Apple was going to do, they didn't really have an option. Intel has been struggling to get their 5G chipsets ready for market. And in fact, Intel announced just this week that they are pulling the plug on their 5G mobile wireless business and won't be developing chipsets for the mobile industry at all, well, certainly not for 5G chipsets. It's difficult to know which came first, Apple's decision to pull the plug or Intel's decision not to continue with making these chipsets. Maybe it was a joint decision between the two parties. But I think Apple kind of shot itself in the foot in some respects in this going so hardcore after Qualcomm, and now they've been forced to back down in kind of a groveling way and say to Qualcomm, actually, you guys, we need you after all. We might think your business model sucks, but we're not going to see you anymore, and we'll buy your chips. but they should have seen this coming, though, shouldn't they? I mean, Intel has always struggled with mobile chips. And it was pretty clear from a while ago that they weren't really going to make a big wave in 5G, just like they haven't really been successful in previous mobile generations. So maybe Tim Cook shouldn't have been so hard-nachat, if I can use that word, towards Qualcomm, no matter what he thinks of the company's business practices.
It's what happens when you kind of get a big head and you think you're the best thing since sliced bread, which I guess some people argue that they are. But you can't be everything to everyone and then still try and reinvent, you know, the silicon behind it. They've done well so far, but in certain things you kind of need to leave it to the experts. I'm not saying that they don't have the engineers, but Qualcomm, you know, these guys haven't been around for just a few years, right? They've been around since the dawn of IT or tech. That's a bit of a big brother to go up against if you are a bit what's the word I'm looking for? Cocky.
Yeah. Hardachat.
Hardachat. Yeah. I don't want to repeat your word. Your word was better.
Now, what I can imagine is happening now, though, knowing how Hardachat, let's use it for a third time, Apple and Tim Cook are, is they'll buy the 5G chipset so they can get their 5G iPhone out next year. Or maybe even this year, although I suspect it's going to be a 2020 project. Maybe they bring it forward, especially with Samsung and Huawei introducing 5G models this year. Maybe they bring it forward. And they use Qualcomm chips, and maybe they do that next year, and maybe they even do it the year after that. But you can be sure that what Apple is going to be doing behind the scenes with all those billions and billions of dollars they have is building their own 5G chipset business, just like they've done in processors.
I wonder what that agreement between them will say. Perhaps something like Apple cannot go into that business for the next 10, 15 years, if 20 years or whatever, I don't know.
They can't do that. That would be, if that came out, there would be a massive lawsuit by the US government, antitrust. They can't, that is directly anti-competitive, and they cannot enter into an agreement like that.
Interesting.
I don't think Apple would anyway, because I don't think Apple wants to. I don't think they want to be so reliant on Qualcomm. Clearly, they've settled this because it was pragmatic to do so, but I don't think the animosity has gone away. I don't think Apple thinks any more of Qualcomm than they did last week.
Well, I mean, they will definitely be re-engineering those chips, reverse engineering those chips to understand how they work, right? I mean, isn't that what you would do as Apple? So surely Qualcomm should know something is going to happen next year. So they should have a plan of their own. I mean, I'm sure at these high levels, you kind of, yeah, it's who outwits who, rather than who just buys the most chips.
And I don't really know enough about the subject of how much work goes into building these sort of products, these semiconductor plants and all the work that goes on behind it. And I know it's a very expensive business, but I find it amazing that the company that dominated desktop computing for so long has been unable to transform itself for the era of mobile computing, and they've just allowed an upstart. I mean, they've been around for a long time, but they still are essentially an upstart next to Intel, talking about Qualcomm, to come in and dominate this market when you'd think that Intel would have the nous, the wherewithal, the factories, the management capability, the technical capability to be able to develop chipsets and processors for mobile phones, and they just haven't been able to do it. It's bizarre.
It is very strange, and maybe somebody just didn't keep their eye on the ball there and maybe thought of this as a non-major threat to their business and maybe realized that a year too late, 6 months too late. And then, yeah, you can't catch up from that point. But they've got all the technical know-how, right? They should have been able to do it.
Yeah.
But perhaps it was just backing a different horse, which is, you know, the desktop enterprise market.
Yeah, and the mobile chips are very different. I mean, they have to be super power efficient, and it could be argued that desktop processors aren't that. Although Intel's done a lot of good work with that, particularly for mobile-oriented, laptop-oriented processors. But still, I suppose mobile is a different class of its own. I do wonder if someone's written a book about this, because it would be a subject, an interesting subject matter, to a story about the rise of Qualcomm and how they ran rings around Intel.
Yeah, that must be a fascinating story, I agree.
And that, Richard, is our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. In the rush of cleaning up at my house this morning, I did the show notes in a bit of a rush after this morning's flood. So we don't have a winner and loser this week. We'll be back with those next week. Do you have a pick this week, Richard?
I actually don't, Duncan. I actually don't today. So for the first time in the history of ever, I'm going to pass on my...
That's all right. I've got a cool pick to make up for it. Excuse me as I knock the mic stand. I recently got a new pair of headphones, and it's not the ones, if you're watching the video, it's not the ones I'm currently wearing. These are my old Bose QC35s, which I love, but they're getting a bit long in the tooth and the cups need replacing. They're getting a bit worn, etc. And I was getting really frustrated with these USB-C dongles, which I keep losing, etc., etc. And I've been reading very good reviews about the particular pair of headphones that I ended up buying. And I am pleased to say that the reviews are quite accurate, and this is an amazing pair of headphones. It was either this or get all the QC35s from Bose, QC35 part 3 or part 2, I forget which. I considered those, read the reviews, and eventually settled on this pair of Sony's. They're the WH-1000XM3. I don't know why tech companies come up with these complicated names for their products, but anyway, the WH-1000XM3. Over-ear, Bluetooth, wireless headphones, noise-cancelling headphones, and I am absolutely blown away. And I was mentioning to you while we were doing our testing ahead of our live show today, Rahat, that I fired up some deeper bass in Spotify. Now, this is not my style of music, you know. I'm into my classic rock.
Your favorite type of music, Duncan.
Into my prog and classic rock. But I wanted to test them out, and the deep bass seemed like a good way of doing it. And the bass, the depth of bass on these headphones is absolutely mind-blowing. No distortion, turn the volume right up, and you could be listening to the most powerful speakers in a nightclub. I mean, it's really, really impressive. So if you're watching the video, here's the here they are, the WH-1000MX3, super comfortable. Apparently, the previous versions of this particular Sony headset have had a problem with the what do you call the bit of across the top? The
Head strap section.
The head that connects the the side pieces. On the previous versions, apparently this was prone to breaking. And I'm just hoping they fix that in the M3. But if they break, I will definitely report back on this podcast. But I haven't seen any reports online about them breaking. If you're in the market for a good pair of high-end headphones, I am seriously impressed with these. Go check them out.
What's the damage on a pair like that? Is it an amount of money that you can say live on air, or?
Yes, I can.
Your wife is listening. You might not want to know myself.
It's not in the five digit range, thankfully. You can get. I was at a music warehouse in Midrand recently, and they've got a pair of Sennheisers there that we're retailing for 27,000 rand. I know we're nearly in that sort of category, and I suspect those Sennheisers do produce a better sound, but not enough to justify the price difference. These are 6K.
That's not bad. That's not bad at all. I was expecting 8,000 or 9,000.
Yeah, it's not bad for what they for the sound quality and the comfort and all the rest of it. I'm very, very impressed with those. So those are the Sony WH-1000. MX3, and Rachel will be back with a pick next week.
I had a song pick, but yeah, we're not doing that anymore. So
no, we're not doing that. Well, in fact, we'll get to that at the end of the show. In fact, we are almost at the end of the show, aren't we? We've done our we've done our soul pick for this week. So yeah, we're not playing out with the song anymore. With us doing live video, playing a song over YouTube is going to introduce all sorts of rights conflicts, and the channel may actually get banned by YouTube because they've got algorithms that listen for copyrighted music. Even though we do have a license here in South Africa to distribute music through Copasso, that's coming to an end at in early June, I think it is. So we're going to let that expire, so we won't have songs at the end of the show anymore, unfortunately. But We've got to move on and do new things, and I'm quite excited about this this live video, and so we'll be tooting it up next week. Otherwise, join us at 1 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. We'll do our best to be here on schedule and join the chat room, and we look forward to engaging with you. I think it's a much more it's a much better way of engaging our audience and getting your feedback. So we look forward to you joining us live on air next week. Look out for a tweet. We'll send it out at least an hour before, I'd say. On Tech Central's Twitter account, which is at Tech Central, one word. And before we wrap up this live YouTube broadcast, let's do our quiz. The first question: BBM is no more. Who had licensed the technology from BlackBerry to continue developing it? And that is Indonesia's MTech Group.
The second question: Microsoft announced a new Xbox this week, which excludes something previously unthinkable. What is missing? And the answer is that all elusive optical drive. DVDs no more, right?
Indeed. Which chip manufacturer this week gave up on making mobile chips for 5G networks? And that's, of course, Intel.
The fourth question: NASA's new planet-hunting orbital telescope discovered its first Earth-side extrasolar planet this week. What is the telescope called? And the answer is Transitioning Exoplanet Survey Satellite, or TESS.
And the last question, a new report from security researcher Troy Hunt shows which password is the most commonly used worldwide. Believe it or not, that is 123456.
Still the most, it's crazy.
It's been
at
like that for a long time.
Let me
in, yeah. The second most common password was 123456789. And the third was QWERTY, QWERTY. Really?
People don't care about their security.
Obviously not.
That's why hacking is such a lucrative career, it seems, you know?
Yeah. You don't even have any skills. Exactly. You just type in QWERTY.
No, you can just, out of 100, you must get at least one hit, right? Out of 100 attempts to somebody's...
Yeah. You could actually go onto Gmail. You might have to change your IP address a few times because Google will probably pick up multiple attempts. You can type in random email addresses at Gmail addresses and no doubt get into someone's account within a few minutes because of this. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy scary. So, yeah, but our tip of the week should still, well, it still is, get yourself a password manager and avoid all the hassle. That's for sure.
And you recommend LastPass? LastPass?
LastPass. LastPass is the one that I use. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
For mobile, it's also nice. But yours is also on mobile, right? You also have a mobile app for it.
Yes.
You can do the same thing. Yeah.
I use Dashlane, yeah. It's a little bit pricey, and I should probably look at 1Pass when my current subscription expires, or LastPass. But yeah.
What do you get for the money you pay?
It comes with a VPN, which I don't use, actually, because I subscribe to NordVPN. It gives you the ability to store your passwords across all your devices, which I'm sure they all do. There is a free tier that you can just use on one PC if you don't need it on more than one device, which obviously I do. What else does it give you? It gives you security alerts when stuff is found, when there's been any hacking incident or your details are found on the dark web or something like that. They proactively alert you. They tell you you need to change your Yahoo password, for example, when there's been a breach, and you can just do it, tap, done. So it's quite proactive in that sense.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, I presume yours does all that as well, though.
Yeah, it's on the browser. I've got the app on my phone if I want to do anything on the phone. But for the browser-based, the Chrome plugin takes care of the rest. And then it's just nice if I want to search for something. So I can, you don't always want to log in someplace, but you want to get the password to copy it to go in from another PC or from another tab or another browser or something. So it's it just makes it a lot easier to get access. I just like the process of getting access to your passwords with LastPass.
For sure.
It's a pretty good app.
So I started recording this show on YouTube and then forgot to record the audio version until about halfway in. So what I'll be doing this week is stripping the audio out of the YouTube video. So the audio quality in the podcast version probably won't be quite up to our normal standards, although it'll be quite listenable too. It'll be easy YouTube quality. That was entirely my mistake, and we'll get back to our normal podcast audio quality from next week. But you're welcome to, if you want to see our see what we look like, see our made for radio faces, then check out the video. That's right, that covers his face. Check out the video in the podcast entry on the website this week. So with all those glitches out of the way and the podcast out of the way for this week, next week we'll be back next Sunday, 1 p.m. Do join us live. Again, we'll be tweeting it out, and check out Tech Central's YouTube channel as well, where you can find all of these videos. So from Richard and myself, until Sunday, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.